Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 26th, 2020. Section A, Coronavirus in Midland. Peyton not prepared to issue mask mandate. Mayor calls on residents to take responsibility for community's health. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. In response to a recent spike in coronavirus cases, Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said Thursday that while he was not prepared to issue a mask mandate or ask businesses to close, more aggressive measures would be considered if residents do not take precautions seriously. His remarks followed an announcement by Odessa Mayor David Turner that he was drafting an ordinance that would require Odessans to wear masks in public places. Peyton said he would not be issuing a mandate for Midland, but more drastic actions, including the reshuttering of businesses, were possible if cases continue to rise. "We're going to have to be really, really get serious about this, or we will have to go backward. And the last thing any of us want to do is begin to shut down businesses again that were so hard hit in March, April, and May," Peyton said during a press conference. At previous press conferences, Peyton repeatedly has said he will not issue a mask mandate, instead calling on residents to take personal responsibility for the health of the community. He again asked residents on Thursday to wear masks and follow social distancing. "The people of Midland, oftentimes we are slow to believe that something is necessary for us to do. But when we find out it is necessary, people go about doing it," he said. "I have no reason to believe that people, knowing what the expectations are, knowing the seriousness of the issue, by us gathering here today, will not take this seriously." Dr. Larry Wilson, chief medical officer at Midland Memorial Hospital, said cases have been increasing since Memorial Day and since businesses began reopening. "Opening things up, people, I think, took that to mean not just getting back to activity, the economy, businesses, but also to behave like things were back to normal. And unfortunately, they're not." He said the coronavirus has not responded to hot weather in the way many physicians had hoped, and as the seasonal flu often does by disappearing during the summer months. Wilson also reminded residents that the incubation period for the coronavirus is up to 14 days, meaning those who are infected today would not show symptoms or test positive until 2 weeks from now. "For that reason, it's inevitable that the number of cases will continue to accelerate over the next few weeks. Today's behaviors cast the die for 2 weeks to 3 weeks into our future." On Thursday, the hospital had about 20 inpatients who had tested positive for the virus, compared to 3 coronavirus patients this time last week. Wilson said that number could easily double to 40 patients next week and 50 or 60 the following week, which would put a significant strain on Midland Memorial Hospital's resources and staff. Myers, mask mandate would be hard to enforce. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. After Odessa's mayor announced Wednesday he was drafting a mask mandate, Midland Memorial Hospital CEO Russell Myers said a mandate would be difficult to enforce in Midland, but it was past time for residents to take personal responsibility in stopping the spread of coronavirus. Mayor David Turner said during a press conference Wednesday he and the city attorney are drafting a mask mandate for the city of Odessa. The measure initially would be authorized by Turner and would then need to be approved by the city council. When asked at a briefing at a briefing Thursday if Midland's leadership should also consider a mask mandate, Myers said it would be challenging to enforce. I think it's very difficult for us to suggest the police force or others be deployed specifically to enforce a mask mandate. It also is sort of amazing to me that we have to tell adults in our community who are witnessing these explosive increases in positive cases every day that they must wear a mask. Dr. James Humphrey, medical director of Midland Memorial Health Services, said the best way to curtail the spike in coronavirus cases is to wear masks indoors, practice hand hygiene, social distance, and stay home if you're sick. He said he did not know if Midland officials were considering a mask ordinance. With or without the mask mandate, we still ought to do it, and we could certainly do it better than we have been doing it. Few Midlanders are taking the necessary precautions. He said requiring masks likely would not change residents' behaviors unless the city had the manpower to enforce a mandate. This is a personal responsibility question, and it's past time for us to step up and take responsibility. MISD official tests positive. Bowie Auditorium shut down. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. A Midland ISD official who was at Monday's board meeting has self-identified as testing positive for coronavirus, according to the school district. The individual was last present at a district facility on Monday at the Bowie Fine Arts Academy during the regularly scheduled board meeting, according to Superintendent Orlando Riddick, on a conference call Thursday afternoon. He also said that anyone in close contact with this individual has been notified of the need to self-quarantine and follow up with their health care provider. Based on the information that the district gathered, it has been determined that July 7th is the end of the 14-day incubation period for anyone possibly exposed. Multiple prevention measures were in place during the MISD board meeting, including physical distancing, hand hygiene, and mask usage. Riddick said that from his vantage point, everyone in the audience wore masks except for one person. Midland ISD's video of the meeting shows only two board meetings members wearing masks. Those not wearing masks were John Kennedy, Board President Rick Davis, Tommy Bishop, Brian Murphy, and John Trishita III. Riddick, board members James Fuller and Robert Marquez, and MISD attorney Sid Pounds were seen wearing masks during the meeting. Riddick said the district would not identify the person who tested positive and didn't indicate whether that person was wearing a mask. The superintendent said the confirmed case said he or she was not demonstrating symptoms before the meeting. Riddick said Bowie Auditorium will be closed for the next 2 weeks and that it's undergoing a deep cleaning and disinfecting to minimize any further risk. The superintendent said MISD will evaluate whether future meetings will be virtual. The coronavirus pandemic complicated the last 3 months of the school year, leading to virtual education. The Midland ISD staff has been busy over the last few weeks with the creation of possible calendars and then working with parents and teachers about reentry into the 2021 school year. Earlier this week, the Texas Education Agency and Governor Greg Abbott said students would return to school campuses this fall. What we don't want is for a public health epidemic to turn us into a plan or strategy that paralyzes us into an educational epidemic, Riddick said. We need to find ways to get back to work so we can educate our children. We know that the best case scenario is a face-to-face option. We know that there are parents who want a virtual option, and we will have both those provisions in place. We don't have the option to put a hold on education until this virus is eradicated. We know that there's a need now and today. Our goal is to meet that need, and I will tell you, we cannot do it alone. Energy survey points to continued decline. The Dallas Federal Reserve Bank says most respondents don't expect activity levels to return to pre-coronavirus levels until 2022. By Mel McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Activity in the energy sector continued to deteriorate as the impact of the coronavirus pandemic and downturn in the oil and gas industry deepened in the second quarter, according to the quarterly energy survey conducted by the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. January and February were relatively normal. March indicated a slowdown. Kunal Patel, business economist with the bank, said in a phone interview, There are 3 months of a slowdown. The survey's business activity index for both exploration and production and service firms sank from a negative 50.9 in the first quarter to a negative 66.1 in the second, the lowest level since the survey began in 2016. The activity index for exploration and production firms fell to negative 62.6 from a negative 53.3. Service firms were harder hit, with their activity index sinking to negative 73.5 from negative 46.3 in the first quarter. About 49% of survey respondents reported applying for government assistance, whether it was the Small Business Association's Paycheck Protection Program or Economic Injury Disaster Loan, Main Street Lending Program, or SBA Express Bridge Loans. Slightly fewer, 47%, said they had not applied for any assistance. Responses also indicate continued contraction in both oil and natural gas production and in employment. Of the producers responding to the survey, 82% had shut in or curtailed production during the second quarter, citing oil and gas prices as the predominant reason. Of the 82% that had shut in or curtailed production, 71% still have some production that is shut in or curtailed. Most, 36%, said they plan to restart production by the end of June, followed by 20% saying July and 18% saying August. That sent the survey's oil production index sinking to a negative 62.6 from a negative 26.6 in the first quarter, while natural gas production fell from a negative 21.2 to a negative 47.8 in the second. Employment cuts appeared to accelerate in the second quarter, with the employment index posting its fifth consecutive negative reading, falling from negative 24 in the first quarter to negative 46.1 in the second. Aggregate employee hours worked also fell to negative 47 from negative 32.1, and aggregate wages plunged from 8.2 to negative 41.7. It was an across-the-board decline in the labor market, headcount, hours, wages, said Patel. He said service companies were further squeezed by falling equipment utilization down to negative 69.2 from negative 47.2 in the first quarter. Input costs fell to negative 50 from negative 11.3, while prices received also fell to negative 64.7 from 37.7. Operating margins fell to negative 68.6. Most respondents don't believe activity levels will return to pre-COVID-19 levels until 2022, while 3% don't see activity ever returning to those levels. Only 5% expect global consumption to return to pre-COVID-19 levels by the fourth quarter, while almost 60% believe consumption will return by the fourth quarter of next year. If there are any positives in the survey responses, it is that the level of uncertainty, while still high, fell 28 points in the first quarter. Company outlooks, while still deeply negative, improved to a negative 51% from 75 in the first quarter. Respondents also raised their expectations for oil prices at the end of the year to $42.11 from $40.50 in the first quarter. USGS. Three earthquakes hit far west Texas, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. U.S. Geological Survey reported 3 earthquakes hit this week west of Mentone, which is located in Loving County. 2 quakes took place Tuesday morning, while the third happened Wednesday morning. Earthquake Track com.com reported on its website that the Wednesday tremor was 2.9 magnitude. It took place at 7:24 a.m., 44 miles west of Mentone. The 2 Tuesday quakes happened at 1:49 a.m. and 3:01 a.m., respectively. The first quake was 2.6 magnitude at 47 miles west of Mentone. The other was a 2.7 magnitude at 32 miles west of Mentone. The website reported Wednesday night that 12 earthquakes have taken place around Mentone this month and 146 in the last 365 days. That does not include a pair of quakes that took place this month around Midland and Odessa. All quakes listed in this report happened at a depth of 3 miles. As a comparison, Earthquake.com reported 3 earthquakes happened around Hennessy, Oklahoma on Wednesday, and that 914 had taken place in that area of Oklahoma during the previous year. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt, but only causes minor damage, according to UPSEIS, an earth educational site for seismologists. There are about 30,000 quakes each year, according to the site. NWS, West Texas to miss out on Saharan dust cloud, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Those expecting to feel the effects of a Saharan dust storm in West Texas might be disappointed, according to the National Weather Service. The official there told Reporter Telegram late Wednesday that an upper-level wind pattern is likely to keep the massive dust cloud away from West Texas. The best chance for dust is in the next few days might come from air pushed from the west, including New Mexico, which has been plagued by dry conditions. NWS officials in Midland have kept track of the nearly 5,000-mile-long plume of dust since it blew off the African coast last week. One meteorologist spoke of reports of poor visibility as it passed over Puerto Rico. However, much of the storm will remain east of the Mississippi, officials said. In fact, a more national short-range forecast from the NWS called for a strengthening Bermuda high that will allow a Saharan dust layer to progress into the Florida Peninsula and Gulf Coast in the coming days. The main impacts of the Saharan dust are a whitening of the sky during daylight hours, redder sunsets, and decreased air quality. Elections Office Needs Workers for July 14th Election, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. Early voting for the runoff election on the hospital and the hospital district sales tax election will begin Monday. This will be the first election under the leadership of Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves. She told the MRT that the office is always in need of workers for elections and encouraged anyone who is interested to call Beth Schock, Assistant Elections Administrator, at 688-4894. Early voting sites are Midland County Elections Office, 2110 North A, Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250, Cogdell Learning Center, 211 West Florida, Fellowship Community Church, 5206 North Midland, and St. Paul United Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason. Early times for early voting are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Thursday, 1 to 6 on July 5th, and 7 to 7 on July 6th through 10th. The 9 election day voting centers can be found on the Elections Office website and will be printed in an upcoming Reporter Telegram edition. On election day, centers will be open 7 to 7. We are encouraging everyone that is eligible to vote by mail to do so, and that deadline to request an application is July 2nd, according to the press release. In Texas, the eligibility requirements for voting by mail are you must be 65 years old or older, disabled or out of the county, and it must be mailed to an out-of-county address. The elections office also reports it is taking precautions for the safety of the workers and voters during the first election to take place since the start of the pandemic. We have shields at each check-in table. The workers will wear gloves and masks, and we will have hand sanitizer for the voters to use on their way out. The voting machines will be cleaned before each voter votes. We will be practicing social distancing and limit the number of voters in the room at a time as per state guidelines. Coronavirus total surpasses 500 in Midland County, from staff reports. The Midland Health Department is recording record-breaking coronavirus totals by the day. On Thursday, the total was 41 confirmed cases in Midland County. Another barrier was broken on Thursday. The total eclipsed 500 cases. The total case count reached 545. For the fourth straight day, the city reported a new single-day mark. For the second straight day, the number of confirmed cases finished in the 40s. Of the 545 cases, 119 patients are considered to have recovered. The city has not reported other information, including age range or source of exposure, by deadline.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, June 26, 2020. Ty Anders protest set for Saturday. A protest is planned for 1 p.m. Saturday at Washington Park in response to the Ty Anders incident. Dallas-based activism group Next Generation Action Network and its founder, Dominique Alexander, are planning to attend, according to a Facebook event page. Anders was arrested on May 16 and charged with evading arrest after failing to immediately pull over when a Midland police officer initiated a traffic stop, according to his arrest affidavit. A widely shared bystander video of the incident showed Anders laying in the grass as several officers pointed guns at him. FBCU kicks off back-to-school fundraiser. Odessa. First Basin Credit Union made a $500 donation to kick off their annual back-to-school donation drive, which benefits children served by the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin. First Basin is requesting monetary donations to be made at any FBCU location, account number 80001-01. All monies raised will be presented to the Rainbow Room to purchase what the students will need for the next school year. The Rainbow Room works with Child Protective Services and helps foster children and all other children involved in CPS care throughout Midland, Odessa, Andrews, and surrounding counties. Donation deadline is July 31. For information, call Janet Sotelo, Community Engagement Coordinator, at 432-248-1443. Texas Book Festival moves from state capital to online. The Texas Book Festival will take place entirely online this year, according to a press release. The festival is planned for October 31 through November 15. The festival was co-founded in 1995 by Laura Bush, then the state's first lady, to bring authors and readers together in a celebration of literature and literacy, according to its website. The annual event normally is held in and around the state capitol. The 2020 Texas Book Festival will feature more than 125 authors participating in virtual sessions, including programming for adults, young adults, middle grade readers, and children. TBF will also have conversations aimed at teenage readers featuring young adult authors. The TBF's annual First Edition Literary Gala, which raises funds for TBS programs, also will take place virtually on November 6. The gala will bring together supporters of the arts, members of the TBF community, and some of the world's leading literary minds for an evening filled with good books and conversation, according to the release. Since the beginning of the coronavirus outbreak and stay-at-home measures in the U.S., the Texas Book Festival has produced online programs with Texas readers and book lovers. For more information on the festival, visit texasbookfestival.org and follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Texas Book Fest for more announcements. Washington Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Washington is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Today in Midland history, In 2007, the National Weather Service recorded a peak wind speed of 93 miles per hour, a record for Midland. Today in history, today is Friday, June 26, the 178th day of 2020. There are 188 days left in the year. On this date, in 1963, President John F. Kennedy visited West Berlin, where he delivered his famous speech expressing solidarity with the city's residents, declaring, "Ich bin ein Berliner," I am a Berliner. In 1974, the supermarket price scanner made its debut in Troy, Ohio, as a 10-pack of Wrigley's Juicy Fruit Chewing Gum costing 67 cents and bearing a uniform product code, UPC, was scanned by a Marsh supermarket cashier. In 1977, Elvis Presley performed his last concert at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis. In 1993, President Bill Clinton announced the U.S. had launched missiles against Iraqi targets because of compelling evidence Iraq had plotted to assassinate former President George H.W. Bush.
The Opinion Page. An opinion extra from Ben Shapiro with the Creators Syndicate. Nation is in the midst of arrogant, self-serving moment. Truly, we live in auspicious times. Those who have sinned will be cast down. Those who are sinless will set new social standards for the rest of us. After all, we now live in the only generation ever to produce truly virtuous human beings. What else should we make of the graceless religious wokeness promoted by our moral betters, such immaculate moral personages as Robin DiAngelo, author of White Fragility, and Nicole Hannah Jones, Pulitzer Prize-winning creator of the New York Times pseudo-historical 1619 Project? DiAngelo informs us that all white people are sinners by nature, inculcated in the evils of whiteness, and utterly incapable of repenting such sin. Unless, of course, they purchase a diversity training course, DiAngelo says, that it isn't enough to oppose racism, we must interrupt the systems in which we live in order to become anti-racist, a vaguely defined term apparently meaning nothing so much as parroting the more purple writings of Ibram X. Kendi. Hannah Jones, meanwhile, happily takes credit for the rioting and looting that has racked the country and that she has spent time justifying. She recently thanked a critic online for terming this unrest the 1619 riots. Furthermore, we are informed by this arbiter of the great and the good that we must never say that figures such as Ulysses Grant, a man who wrecked the Confederacy and devastated the Ku Klux Klan, but also held one of his wife's slaves in bondage before freeing him, were men of their times. After all, Hitler was a man of his time. Osama bin Laden was a man of his time, she said in now-deleted tweet. We, however, live in an age of true heroes, people who live outside of time, people of sterling quality who need no context, require no nuance, and brook no dissent. All who stand before them must bow or be canceled. Old tweets will be resurfaced. Old comedy sketches will be censored, and those who came before were complicit in the system and thus must pay. So young woke leftists cheer as they tear down monuments of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Generation Z college students chide their parents and grandparents, many of whom, in minority communities, experienced actual discrimination and hardship, as insufficiently committed to the cause of anti-racism. Giselle Quintero, 18, told the Washington Post about her grandparents. They were prohibited from drinking at whites-only fountains after long, hot days of working in the fields, the Post wrote, and tried to distinguish themselves by their hard work and achievement. But clearly, because they lacked enthusiasm for the current woke revolution, they just kind of suppressed those memories. Quintero's grandparents may have overcome actual racism, but she posted news of a protest at a local mall on her social media. Perhaps we have truly reached the apex of humanity. Or perhaps we are living in a particularly arrogant and self-serving moment when disassociation from America's history and from other Americans substitutes for actual decency, when canceling others is the point, not a means to an end, when joining the woke mob isn't about building something better but merely signaling your own saintliness. Perhaps in reality, those who pull down statues of Washington and Jefferson have accomplished little other than feeling special at the expense of the most special country in human history and at the expense of their fellow citizens. Obituaries and death notices. Jim William Wood, Sr., 69, died June 23rd at his home in Midland. He was born on August 23, 1950, in Odessa to Charles and Myra Wood. He graduated from Odessa High in 1969, after which he enlisted in the Marine Corps. He is survived by his wife, Judy, two sons, two daughters, six grandchildren, three brothers, and many nieces and nephews. Visitation and viewing will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, June 26th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will take place at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 27th at Iatan Cemetery east of Cahoma, Texas. After the service, a celebration of Jim's life will be at Wood's home from 12:30 to 3 o'clock p.m. in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Melvin Mel Scarberry Jr. passed away on Father's Day, June 21st. He was born on September 23rd, 1957, to Melvin and Patsy Scarberry in Roswell, New Mexico. The funeral service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday in the chapel of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Doors of Hope Mission, Odessa, Texas. Frances Idabel Smith, 98, of Midland, passed away Sunday, June 21st. She was born October 13, 1921, in Sayre, Arkansas. Funeral services will be Sunday, June 27th at 10 a.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Kevin Willingham, 41, of Midland, passed away June 24th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, June 26th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 27th at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Reuben Edward Sanchez passed away on Wednesday, June 24th, after a brief battle with pancreatic cancer. Survivors include his wife, Cynthia, father, Nick, two daughters and one son, and one sister. The family will have a private service in lieu of flowers. They ask for memorial donations to be sent to the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. Arrangements are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, June 26th, 2020. Section A. Mayor waiting on mask mandate. As Governor Greg Abbott pauses the reopening of the state due to an increase in cases, Odessa Mayor David Turner said during a phone interview Thursday that there may be an emergency meeting Monday regarding a mask mandate, but that the decision is still up in the air. I'm waiting for a couple of mayors to get back with me. We talked, and they're going to get back with some information, he said, adding that if there was an emergency meeting, he wanted to make sure everyone involved would be in town for it. The City Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez wrote in an email that the free testing held from 9 to 11 a.m. Tuesday at Sherwood Park will not require pre-registration. She wrote that people should show up early, wear a mask, bring an ID to verify identity, and that those conducting tests could test people as young as 3 and up if the child is cooperative. Sanchez added in a text later in the day that pre-registration is being considered for future testing events in order to maintain efficiency, but that no decision had been made yet. Those unable to attend the free testing have the option of paying for a PCR test at one of Medical Center Hospital's urgent cares. Chris Tovar, the divisional director for MCH Urgent Care, said that the urgent care patients can co-pay with their insurance or self-pay, and it's $100 up front, and we just bill on the back end, he said, adding that self-pay tests can be closer to $400. I wish I could say that I can do it for free, but unfortunately, to be able to go that route is unfeasible, he said. Tovar also said that the reason that RT-PCR tests are sometimes taking up to a week for results is due to the high capacity of them being conducted. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, people needed to meet different qualifications to get a test. But Tovar said that now, anybody who wants a test can get a test. At my urgent care, before we were kind of keeping it to specific areas that were higher risk areas. But when the community opened up, of course, parties are happening, barbecues, funerals, a lot of different things. So people are being exposed at a much higher rate. Adding that the criteria for travel isn't used anymore because the virus is in the community. The urgent cares for medical center have kind of just been allowing people to walk into my clinic, he said, adding that on Wednesday, the 42nd Street urgent care saw 93 patients. We want people to feel comfortable, so giving people the opportunity to do our test, which is the RT-PCR, reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction. I think it keeps the community in a safer mindset that somebody can test them, regardless if they're asymptomatic, he said, adding that they try to steer people with severe symptoms to go to the ER because there might be other things they might need. He said that the clinics still have to be mindful of exposure, so they are making an effort to practice safe precautions like wearing masks, washing hands, social distancing. Those things are very key to these environments with an influx of patients wanting tests, he said. Is it perfect? No, he said. But is it safe? Yes, because we're not piling everybody up in a confined area, and we try to keep everybody with the understanding that for their protection, for their safety, wearing a mask is mandatory now. So anybody coming into my 42nd Street clinic has to have a mask. A Thursday, Ector County Health Department press release detailed that 734 people have tested positive for the virus in the county. The health department detailed that 480 are confirmed tests and 254 are probable positive tests, most of which the county previously reported are from those who tested positive from the antigen test that is 100% accurate, if positive. The press release also showed that 262 patients have recovered from the virus and 947 tests are pending. The health department also added that although they understand the importance of sharing information with our community, they will only be updating the statistics on the website Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays due to the increase in cases. They added that the decision was not made lightly, and that the health department's Facebook page will have different information added several times a day. A Thursday MCH press release detailed that 259 patients have tested positive for COVID-19, and 21 of them are in the hospital, which is the highest total they've had since March. 14 of those patients are on the 7 central designated floor, which has 30 beds available. 7 patients are in the CCU and 3 of them are on ventilators. MCH reported that they have 20 CCU beds available. The release detailed that there are no persons under investigation in the hospital and 454 tests are pending. CBS 7 reported that the seventh Focused Care at Crane nursing home resident died from COVID-19 related complications Thursday. 34 residents have tested positive at Focused Care at Crane. 15 have recovered, 8 residents on the COVID unit, and 2 more residents were reportedly cleared to step down from the COVID unit. CBS 7 reached out to the Crane facility because the breakdown didn't add up to 34, and they did not get back to CBS 7 by press time. Accused gunman sent to mental facility. Grace McDonald charges dismissed. The man dubbed the Odessa serial shooter received an order of commitment to a maximum security mental health facility or psychiatric facility. On June 8th, a doctor deemed Troy Lee Wilson, 37, incompetent to stand trial and is a person with mental illness and requires observation and/or treatment in a maximum security mental health facility or psychiatric facility for his own welfare and protection or for the protection of others. The order of commitment was signed by 358th District Judge Stacy Trotter. Wilson posted not guilty to 5 charges, which included murder, during his arraignment January 22nd in Trotter's courtroom. An order for examination regarding incompetency was filed April 1st, court records show. The psychological evaluation was completed by Dr. Perry Marchione, PhD, who issued a certification and written report which concluded Wilson is incompetent to stand trial and would benefit from treatment at a maximum security mental health facility or psychiatric facility. Wilson is reportedly going to be committed, confined, and held at a maximum security mental health facility or psychiatric facility to be designated by the Department of State Health Services for observation and/or treatment for a period not to exceed 120 days. Wilson was indicted by an Ector County grand jury on 1 count of murder, first-degree felony, and 4 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, second-degree felony, on December 17, 2019. The charges stem from a string of shootings that left one man dead, another man hospitalized, and many Odessans afraid of another random gunman, following the August 31st mass shooting that left 7 dead and 25 others injured. The 37-year-old has 5 bonds totaling $450,000. He was in the Ector County Law Enforcement Center since December 11, 2019. Previous to his transfer to the ECLEC, Wilson was in custody at the Midland County Detention Center since September 27, 2019. A Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy was notified at 12:09 p.m. September 27, 2019 by an Odessa Police Department undercover unit that it was following a white 2015 Ford F-50 that matched the description of a possible murder suspect that was linked to several shootings in Ector County, a previous Odessa American article detailed. The MCSO deputy reportedly saw the pickup with an obscured rear license plate and a toolbox at 12:19 p.m. at mile marker 128 on Interstate 20. A traffic stop was attempted, but the pickup failed to stop. The MCSO deputy activated his emergency siren on his marked patrol car and saw the driver through the back window of the pickup, appeared to look into both the driver and passenger side mirrors and reach with his right arm inside the vehicle for an unknown object. The pickup continued east at 55 miles per hour for 4 miles before it exited at mile marker 131, a previous Odessa American article detailed. The vehicle stopped near the Interstate South Service Road just west of Loop 250. During the traffic stop, there were reportedly two firearms with similar ammunition from the fatal shooting scene. Wilson told a Texas Ranger during a video recorded interview September 27, 2019, that he shot 31-year-old Juan Leonardo Rosales twice in the head on September 26, 2019, after Rosales had pulled off the road with car trouble on business Interstate 20 between FM 1936 and the I-20 overpass. Jesus Alvarado, 52, was shot at 4:22 p.m. September 24, 2019, and sought help at the Pilot truck stop located near the intersection of Meteor Crater Road and I-20. Alvarado was reportedly shot in the abdomen while he was waiting on the side of the road for a crew truck to arrive. That man was later treated and released from Medical Center Hospital. The fourth shooting that night was fatal. In the Ector County felony dispositions, 26-year-old Elizabeth Grace McDonald had a capital murder of multiple persons, 1903 felony charge, dismissed July 13, 2018. Judge James Rush presided, and Steve Brand was the attorney. The capital murder of multiple persons and criminal conspiracy charges were filed against McDonald March 2, 2016, a previous Odessa American article detailed. Her adoptive brother, 19-year-old Gabe McDonald, was also initially charged with capital murder, but made a plea bargain and pleaded guilty to 2 counts of murder. He was accused of pulling the trigger. A grand jury later charged Grace McDonald with prohibited sexual conduct on suspicion she had sexual intercourse with her adoptive brother weeks before the killings. While Grace McDonald has had her charges dropped, her brother is in prison. Gabe McDonald was sentenced to 2 50-year sentences, which will run concurrently. Free COVID-19 testing. The city of Odessa has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing Tuesday and Thursday, July 16th and 21st, 23rd, 28th, and 30th, at the following times and locations. Tuesday, 9 to 11 a.m. at Sherwood Park, 4819 North Everglade. Thursday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Woodson Park, 1020 East Murphy. July 14th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Salinas Park, 600 West Clements. July 16th, 9 to 11 a.m. at UTPB Park, Highway 191 and Loop 338. July 21st, 9 to 11 a.m. at Lawndale Park, 9201 Rainbow Drive. July 23rd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Floyd Gwynn Park, 1015 North County Road West. July 28th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Slater Park, 1001 West 38th. July 30th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Dan Hempill Central Park, 1201 East 13th. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event. Participants must wear a mask and ID. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children ages 3 and up if the child is cooperative. For more information, call 582-7969. Quick hits. Gun and Blade Show. The Silversburg Gun and Blade Show has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Midland County Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. Admission is $7 for adults and free for 12 and under. $1 off for NRA, TSRA, or military with ID. All law enforcement get in free with their badge. Only one discount or special can be used at a time. A two-day pass is $12. Visit tinyurl.com/YC2MMG4Z. Harmony plans flexible classrooms. Harmony Public Schools will allow each family to choose whether to continue learning from home or return to campus for in-person learning for the 2020-21 school year based on each family's unique needs. Families can also switch between the two as local COVID-19 conditions or family situation changes. The flexible learning plan was announced by Harvey CEO Fatih I in a letter to families. The best choice for Harmony in 2020-21 is the choice that's best for your family, Fatih added in a news release. While this flexible plan may be an uncommon approach, we firmly believe it is the right approach for families during these uncommon times. Families who choose at-home learning will have access to the same rigorous academic environment that they have come to expect from their neighborhood Harmony campus, taught by teachers trained for educating and engaging students in a virtual environment. Families who choose to send their students for in-person learning will find a safe and organized learning environment that they can feel comfortable sending their child to each day. This includes enhanced health and sanitary protocols, as well as possible adjustments to daily routines to help keep all of the students and team members as safe as possible. All students will continue to receive the same full academic and support services from their teachers, counselors, and school leaders that they would receive on campus, including our English language learners and students receiving special education services. Helping to keep families connected, regardless of their learning location, is Harmony's new all-in-one learning management system, Schoology. Through Schoology, students and families will have full access to instructional materials, assignments, grading, calendars, and parent messaging in one platform that follows them seamlessly from at home to in-person learning and back, if needed. Harmony Public Schools is a Texas-born, Texas-wide public charter school system with campuses serving pre-kindergarten through grade 12 students in 23 cities across the state, including Greater Houston, DFW, San Antonio, Austin, El Paso, Waco, Lubbock, Odessa, Bryan, Beaumont, and the Rio Grande Valley. Harmony's curriculum places a heavy focus on STEM skills, character education, project-based learning, and college readiness. Harmony Public Schools is currently accepting applications for the 2020-21 school year for both students and team members. On the net, harmonytx.org. Vitalant to hold blood drive at Music City Mall. COVID-19 antibody tests available to all donors by Sam Waller. After enduring 2 months of the coronavirus lockdown, Vitalant Blood Center has been playing catch-up in June. Vitalant will hold a three-day blood drive starting Friday at Music City Mall. Donations will be accepted from 2 to 6 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Diane Scott, donor recruitment supervisor for Vitalant, said blood supplies are running behind because of the pandemic. We're in critical need of blood right now because of the 2 months when we only had 4 blood drives versus 64 blood drives, Scott said. Usually I have 30 to 32 blood drives a month. During April and May, we had 8 blood drives. I think we got 200 units compared to 800. That's how much we're behind. We're probably at least, I'm going to say, at least 1,000 units behind right now. Scott said donations have picked up since restrictions were loosened, but blood banks are still scrambling to make up the shortfall. Since June 1st, we started having blood drives again, she said. I could only have one blood drive a day in the buses. Then sometimes we could have a setup. Every day I try to have at least one blood drive a day. Since we started having blood drives, people have been coming out to donate, and I do appreciate that. They need to continue to do so. The crux of the matter, she said, is getting the public to realize donations are still needed, even in a time of pandemic. Nobody's ever seen the kind of crazy we're having now, she said. Even though we have had COVID and the world's in a pandemic, that doesn't mean we don't need blood anymore. That's what I want people to understand and know. The usage is still there. People still have surgeries. People have accidents. People need blood. People still have cancer. People have leukemia. People stop donating and the need hasn't changed. It's very important that people realize that they need to come out and donate blood. In addition to collecting blood, Vitalant is also offering the COVID-19 antibody test to all donors. People want to know if they've had COVID-19 or not, Scott said, adding that the disease cannot be transmitted through blood. Scott said the pandemic has changed the way Vitalant must conduct its blood drives. We used to be able to have 2 bus drives a day if we needed to, she said. Now we can only have 1 bus drive and take 2 buses. One of the buses has to be for the interviews and the other one has to be phlebotomy. Social distancing and COVID-19 have hit us hard and in a lot more ways than just people not being able to get out and donate. Among the precautions being taken, Vitalant is requiring both staff and donors wear a face covering. We're asking everybody to wear a mask, Scott said. We wear masks and we want people to wear masks. If they do not have a mask, we will provide them one. Scott said the Vitalant staff will be bouncing around the Music City Mall property over the 3 days of the blood drive. The first day, we're going to be in the 2 buses in the parking lot behind Fuddruckers, she said. The second day, Saturday, we're going to be inside where the carousel is. Then Sunday, we'll be back in the buses.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.